Well, let's go ahead and get into our Bible study for the day. We are in the book of Leviticus, which is kind of a tough book to look at verse by verse because it's a tech manual for the priests and somewhat for the Levites. We've been going over them verse by verse for the offering of the sacrifices. I have summarized in the form of a chart a lot of the material that we're going over right now in my chronological companion to the Bible, which is available online, IntoTheWord2020.com. You can keep it as an electronic edition, or you can print it out for yourself. It's just a detailed outline of the Bible in chronological order. And so some of the things like this, which do better for us Western thinkers in chart form, I've tried to present that for you. But we, that is I, decided this time through, we really needed to go kind of verse by verse through this sacrificial section and maybe digest a few bits and pieces here and there. So we are looking at chapter number 7 today. We're going to finish up what we've been talking about with the burnt offering, the grain offering, the peace offering, the sin offering, and the guilt offering. So we've just got this chapter left for our start today. Chapter 7, verse 1 in Leviticus. This is the law of the guilt offering. It is most holy. So what's a guilt offering? It's intended to acknowledge you were guilty in something. That is, you were in the wrong, and someone else, perhaps the Lord, was in the right, and you need to fix the problem. So how did the Israelites fix it according to the sacrificial system? Verse 2, in the place where they kill the burnt offering, they shall kill the guilt offering, and its blood shall be thrown against the sides of the altar. That's the burnt offering altar out in the front. All its fat shall be offered, the fat tail, the fat that covers the entrails, the two kidneys with the fat that's on them at the loins, the long lobe of the liver, which I suspect is the one with the gallbladder, that he shall remove from the kidneys. The priest shall burn them on the altar as a food offering to he who is. It is a guilt offering. Every male among the priests may eat of it. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. So a guilt offering, a representative portion, particularly the fatty inward parts, that's all burnt up as part of the sacrifice. And then the officiating priests all can eat the rest of it, as long as they're eating it right there in the tabernacle area, later in the temple complex. Every male that's there can eat of it. Verse number 7, the guilt offering is just like the sin offering. There is one law for them. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it. So definitely the officiating priest gets to eat some of this. The priest who offers any man's burnt offering shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering that he has offered. Now we get into some of the things that the priests earn as their pay for officiating. So if you're the priest that is officiating for this burnt offering ceremony, you automatically get the skin from the animal. Now, what you do with it is up to you. You might actually sell it to somebody else, or maybe you're going to use it for your own leather purposes. Verse 9, every grain offering baked in the oven and all that's prepared on a pan or a griddle shall belong to the priest who offers it. So he's got first dibs on the grain offerings that he has officiated with. Every grain offering mixed with oil or dry shall be shared equally among all the sons of Aaron. So all those that are on duty get to eat of it. This is the law of the sacrifice of peace offerings that one may offer to he who is. If he offers it for a thanksgiving, that is, not because of sin, he's just happy and he's thankful to God for something, then he shall offer with the thanksgiving sacrifice unleavened loaves mixed with oil, unleavened wafers smeared with oil, and loaves of fine flour well mixed with oil. With the sacrifice of his peace offerings for thanksgiving, he shall bring his offering with loaves of leavened bread, And from it he shall offer one loaf for each offering as a gift to he who is. It shall belong to the priests who throw the blood of the peace offerings. So again, the officiating priest gets first dibs on these edible parts of the sacrificial ceremony. Verse 15, the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offerings for thanksgiving shall be eaten on the day of his offering. He shall not leave any of it until morning. So it's only for that day's consumption. Anything that's left over that's not eaten is to then be burnt up. But if the sacrifice of his offering is a vow offering or a free will offering, it shall be eaten on the day that he offers his sacrifice, and on the next day, what remains of it shall be eaten. So in the case of someone offering a sacrifice that attends a vow or the completion of a vow or something that they just want to give because they want to give it, that actually has 2 days that the priest can eat of it. But what remains of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day shall be burned up with fire. If any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offerings is eaten on the third day, he who offers it shall not be accepted, neither shall it be credited to him. It's tainted, and he who eats of it shall bear his iniquity. So the priests are supposed to know these rules. That's what the book of Leviticus is for. And if they violate it, it invalidates the ceremony. And it actually brings guilt on them that generates them having to offer the sacrifices that we talked about earlier. So the better choice is always follow the rules. Verse 19, flesh that touches any unclean thing shall not be eaten. It shall be burned up with fire. All who are clean may eat flesh. So a couple of things there. If for some reason the food gets in contact with something unclean, now, how that could happen in the holy environment of the tabernacle, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head, other than maybe somebody coming to work that was not ceremonially clean. But any of the flesh that touches an unclean thing in the clean area, it's automatically off limits now for eating. But everybody who is clean, everybody that's serving on duty that day, having gone through the ceremonies of cleanliness, they can eat all of this stuff. Verse 20, but the person who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of he who is his peace offerings, while an uncleanness is on him, that person shall be cut off from his people. We've talked about this phrase before. It has 3 different levels to it, increasing in seriousness. The first one is you basically get shunned for a bit. That's being cut off from the community. The second is excommunication. That's much more serious, where you won't behave yourself repeatedly, and so you basically get booted out until you repent and come back and say you'll behave. And then the last one is execution. And that's where you've proved yourself over and over again. You can't be trusted, and you won't behave, and you don't seem to want to stay away in your misbehavior. And so you basically leave no other choice than execution. And so same thing is going to apply in this case. We're thinking about a priest who won't serve as a clean person. And we're not talking about hygiene here. We're talking about ceremony. Verse number 21. If anyone touches an unclean thing, whether human uncleanness or an unclean beast or an unclean detestable creature, and then eats some of the flesh of the sacrifices, he who is his peace offering, that person shall be cut off from his people. The priests are supposed to know this. They're supposed to know the rules. And if they go ahead and eat of the holy things when they are themselves unclean, that's big trouble for them. And if they get busted, then they face some very severe penalties for that. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, saying, you shall eat no fat of ox or sheep or goat. The fat of an animal that dies of itself and the fat of the one which is torn by beasts may not be put to any other use, but on no account shall you eat it. So the fat is supposed to be off limits. Now, we're not talking about the marbling fat that's in the midst of the muscle. We're talking about the fat that's on the inside of the abdominal cavity and the fat sheath over the outside of the muscle. All of that's supposed to be trimmed off. Some of it is supposed to be burned up in the sacrifice. Other parts of it apparently can be used in other uses, perhaps as maybe some sort of energy source, maybe a tallow candle. That sort of fat can be rendered, unless, of course, the animal died without being properly bled out. You can't use any of that fat whatsoever. Verse 25, for every person who eats of the fat of an animal of which a food offering may be made to he who is, shall be cut off from his people. So very severe penalties if you break this rule. Verse 26, moreover, you shall eat no blood whatsoever, whether of fowl or of animal, in any of your dwelling places. Whoever eats any blood, that person shall be cut off from his people. Now this goes all the way back to Genesis chapter number 9, when animals were first added to the diet after the flood. The people were told at that time, long before the Mosaic Covenant came into existence, the blood, and we're talking here about the blood of the arterial blood, the blood that's pumping through everything, and when you kill an animal, you butcher it by cutting its throat, and that blood pumps right out. And then you hang the animal up, and whatever little bit is still left, gravity pulls it out. That blood is never to be eaten by people. It's off limits. When we get to the New Testament period, when there's this big debate about whether or not Gentiles have to follow Mosaic law, Acts chapter 15, the answer is no, they do not have to follow Mosaic law, but they do have to follow the universal laws that are found in the book of Genesis, which includes you do not eat arterial blood. And so this is the sort of thing that even New Testament believers need to adhere to. So those of you that may have grown up in societies where arterial blood was caught and drunk or turned into a food item, you need to stop that. It's not appropriate. It is against God's commandments all the way back to the first time that animals were put on the menu. And so I implore you to be obedient to the instructions of the Lord on that topic. Verse number 28, he who is spoke to Moses saying, speak to the people of Israel saying, whoever offers the sacrifice of his peace offering to he who is shall bring his offering to he who is from the sacrifice of his peace offerings. His own hand shall bring he who is his food offerings. He shall bring the fat with the breast, that the breast may be waved as a wave offering before he who is. The priest shall burn the fat on the altar, but the breast shall be for Aaron and his sons. So now we're getting back again to this idea that the officiating priest, certain parts of the sacrifice automatically belongs to him. And in this case, we're talking about the brisket, the breast area, the chest area. That's an automatic, goes to the priests. Also, verse 32, the right thigh you shall give to the priests as a contribution from the sacrifice of your peace offerings. Whoever among the sons of Aaron offers the blood of the peace offerings and the fat shall have the right thigh for a portion. For the breast that is waved and the thigh that is contributed, I have taken from the people of Israel out of the sacrifices of their peace offerings, and have given them to Aaron the priest and to his sons as a perpetual due for the people of Israel, or from the people of Israel. This is the portion of Aaron and of his sons from he who is his food offerings from the day they were presented to serve as priests of he who is. In fact, we saw that during the ceremony of Aaron and his sons' ordination, that the breast and the thigh automatically go to them as the priests. Moses actually got to eat it on the day of the first dedication of a high priest because he was acting as the officiating priest. There is no right of the common people to have those particular cuts of the sacrifice given back to them when they're going through this process. That's the priest's pay for what they do. He who is commanded this to be given them by the people of Israel from the day that he anointed him, it is a perpetual due throughout their generations. This is the law of the burnt offering, of the grain offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering, the ordination offering, and of the peace offering, which he who is commanded Moses on Mount Sinai on the day that he commanded the people of Israel to bring their offerings to he who is in the wilderness of Sinai. So these first seven chapters, that's the tech manual for sacrifice. And I hope you didn't get too bogged down in it. The big thing for New Testament believers to take away from this is Jesus fulfilled it all. Book of Hebrews makes it plain that he is the ultimate sacrifice for sin. Everything pointed to him, and we need to go to him to have our sins forgiven. Now, the next few chapters we've already done because they are related to the ordination ceremony for Aaron and his sons as high priests, and all the sacrifices that happened during that time. Then we move to chapter 11, where God begins giving all the rules and regulations that the Israeli people need to know about, regarding, in particular, cleanliness. And again, when we talk about cleanliness in the context of the Mosaic Code, we're talking about ceremonial cleanliness, not hygiene. There do seem to be some hygiene elements involved in it, but it is much more related to the ceremonial holiness that is supposed to be maintained by the Israeli people. And sometimes we'll talk about this as being the ceremonial law. And we're going to go through it. It's, again, a tech manual. This is for the priests and the Levites to make determinations for the people of Israel as to what the standards are day by day and moment by moment. And I want to offer some of this as illustrations of proper behavior. Some of it is going to be illustrations of trusting God, that when he sets a standard, that's what we live by. This is mostly for the Jewish people to be adhered to, but there are some elements of it, some principles of it, that I think we New Testament believers, we Gentile New Testament believers, can learn from. Leviticus chapter number 11. He who is spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying to them, speak to the people of Israel, saying, these are the living things that you may eat among all the animals that are on the earth. So let's talk about Israeli diet. What's on the menu and what's off the menu? Verse number 3. Whatever parts the hoof and is cloven-footed and chews the cud among the animals you may eat. All right, so here's the rule of thumb that God gives to them so that they can make a really quick judgment call as to what they can and cannot eat as meat animals. It involves the foot. The foot has to have a split in it, and they also have to, as an animal, chew the cud, which means, in the most case, we're talking about they've got more than one stomach, and so they reprocess the food. That's what puts them on the menu, because these animals are going to be probably the most healthy pool of animals to eat from. Verse number 4. Nevertheless, Among those that chew the cud or part the hoof, you shall not eat these. The camel is not on the menu because it chews the cud, but it does not part the hoof. It is unclean to you. So this is an illustration of both rules have to apply or the animal is not on the menu. The rock badger, because it chews the cud but does not part the hoof. It is unclean to you. So even though the rock badger doesn't have multiple stomachs like, say, a cow, it does look like it's chewing a cud all the time. Rabbits are like this too. In fact, rabbit is kind of mentioned in the next verse. But it doesn't have the split hoof sort of thing. So they're off the menu. Verse 6, the hare, because it chews the cud but does not part the hoof, is unclean to you. The pig, because it parts the hoof and is cloven-footed, but it doesn't chew the cud, it is unclean to you. So it may have the split hoof look on its foot, but it doesn't chew the cud. You shall not eat any of their flesh and shall not touch their carcasses. They are unclean to you. So that's how we find out pigs are off the menu. And they are probably the most specific animal that was off the list of Jewish people, which happened to also be on the list of Gentile people. All right, let's move to water. Verse 9, these you may eat of all that are in the waters, everything in the waters that has fins and scales, whether in the sea or in the rivers you may eat. So the two standards are, and both have to be true, the fish or the water-dwelling creature has to have fins, and it also has to have scales. Verse 10, but anything in the seas or the rivers that has not fins and scales, of the swarming creatures in the waters and of the living creatures that are in the waters is detestable to you. You shall regard them as detestable. You shall not eat any of their flesh, and you shall detest their carcasses. Everything in the water that is not fins and scales is detestable to you. And these you shall detest among the birds. So the water creatures, very simple rule of thumb. If it doesn't have both fins and scales, off the menu. So lobsters off the menu, even though they kind of got a scaly look to them with the divided carcass or carapace, they don't have fins. So they're off the menu. Oysters off the menu because they don't have fins and scales. Now the birds. These you shall detest among the birds. They shall not be eaten. They are detestable. The eagle, the bearded vulture, the black vulture, the kite, the falcon of any kind, every raven of any kind, the ostrich, the nighthawk, the seagull, the hawk of any kind, the little hawk, the cormorant, the short-eared owl, the barn owl, the tawny owl, the carrion vulture, the stork, the heron of any kind, the hoopoe, and the bat. Now remember, they didn't categorize the birds like we do between, you know, avian and flying mammals. They just talked about anything that flies in the sky. So that's why bats are on the list here. So the rule here is basically carrion eaters. Things that eat flesh are off the menu. Verse 20, all winged insects that go on all fours are detestable to you. Yet among the winged insects that go on all fours, you may eat those that have jointed legs above their feet with which they hop on the ground. Now, when they talk about insects here, they talk about going on all 4 feet. That's because the four legs were kind of considered arms by their categorization. So they basically had four legs plus two arms. So the only thing that made it possible for you to eat these insects is if they hopped, such as locusts, which are just basically giant grasshoppers. Verse 22, of them you may eat the locust of any kind, the bald locust of any kind, the cricket of any kind, and the grasshopper of any kind. All the other winged insects that have 4 feet are detestable to you. And by these you shall become unclean. Whoever touches their carcass shall be unclean until the evening. Whoever carries their any part of their carcass shall wash his clothes and shall be unclean until evening. Every animal that parts the hoof but not cloven-footed and does not chew the cud is unclean. Everyone who touches them shall be unclean. And so we're running out of time here, so I'm going to just summarize again. All this stuff is about the animals that are unclean up to this category that we've been talking about. When we come back on Monday, we will pick up at verse number 29, because we're not through the whole list of what the unclean animals are. So I hope you have a great weekend and that you have a great worship time with either your family or those at the building that are attending with you.